Hey everyone, before we get into it today, if you've ever thought about starting your own podcast or taking your current one to the next level, you have to check out Podigy Podcast. They didn't just help us launch this show, which we need a lot of help with. They made it look and sound amazing with custom artwork, killer music, and they guided us through the launching of the show step by step. Now they handle everything for us, editing, producing, you name it. All we do is hit record and they do the rest. Trust me. If you're serious about podcasting, you need them in your corner. Click the link in the show notes to schedule a free one-on-one podcast game plan session with them. You won't be sorry. Welcome to the Path Podcast that provides transformative insights for authentic success. My name is Chris Weiss, and together with my partners, Stuart Ferguson and Toby Quinton, we make up True Path Consulting, where our mission is to maximize executive performance and drive personal growth by guiding leaders on a journey of self-fulfillment and true success. I want to thank you for pressing play on whatever device you're listening to us on today. It means a lot to us that you are here. Our hope is that through our stories and interviews, that you will find something in yourself, something that moves you to get curious, possibly something that triggers you to take action in your life. You see, the goal in this podcast and in our coaching partnerships is to help people find their ideal selves without needing the motivation of that personal or professional crisis. We'll bring up topics and curate discussions that will help you take action to find out how you are showing up in the roles that are or should be a priority in your life, ultimately helping you paint the picture of who you want to be and walking with you to figure out what the heck is getting in your way from becoming your ideal self. We only get one shot at this awesome thing called life. So let's stop being okay with being miserably comfortable and instead be more intentional in following a path of meaning and purpose. With that being said, I'd like to more formally welcome my partners that are going on this journey with us. Mr. Stuart Ferguson, how the heck are you, buddy?
Good day, sir. Mr. Toby, how are you? Good to see you guys. Glad to be here. I've got to come up with something wittier with this beginning part of our podcast here where you do the check-in. I don't ever feel like I have anything profound to say. So I'm going to say my check-in is I am present and highly, highly engaged. That's where I'm at today.
Great.
Isn't that powerful?
Love it.
That was a different tone for this podcast.
Who needs to prep it? I mean, good. I'm starting out hot here. I love it. Chris, how are you doing? Because Stu pivoted back to you last time, and I think that's a good call. So you're a great opener for us, and I'd love to go to you next.
Is that right? I thought he was going to be like, he's like, I don't have anything witty, and I thought he was going to come up with something, but then he just...
No, I was just being honest.
Hey, man, I'm doing... low expectations. I'm doing great this morning. We're recording on a Monday. I realized there was a couple things getting out from my life. I wanted to get back to working out. I wanted to get back to running again. I wanted to create a new morning routine, the one that's been floating around in my head forever. So this morning I got up at 5:15. I did press snooze once. Ted Bickford, he always beat me up about it. He said I'm a loser for pressing snooze, but I don't believe that. I think it's okay to press snooze at least once. So I did do that, but I got up at
You said his name.
I know. Yeah. So I got up at 5:15 and I did some, you know, old man stretching / yoga. I did some, I actually worked out on the Tonal, which has been collecting dust, at least for me. My kids use it a lot, but I haven't used it. And then I got to have coffee with my wife and the kids got off to school and I went for a run. So it's been a great day. And just, man, when you do that, I mean, you have so much energy for the rest of the day. I mean, I've been just motoring all day. So it's cool. It's been a really good day so far. I had a great weekend with my parents coming into town, a big soccer weekend, which was fun. So life is good, guys. Life is good. Awesome. Good to see you guys. How about
much
you, Toby?
Much better update than the previous guy. So good. Yeah. You won the update.
Yeah, thanks for setting the bar, Stu, for us. That's awesome.
Really low.
Yeah. Hey, I'm great. I know part of our journeys together and our paths are a lot about laughter and I had a good old belly laugh over the weekend and just hung out and had a great conversation with a good friend. And he always makes me laugh. And so I'm riding the high of remembering that Dr. Joe told me years ago, like, how's your laugh life? And I think we've referenced that before in these. And there is something very true about that. So still got all that, life going on around us, and it's not all heavy. Some of it is, some of it isn't, but just worked on that little muscle of the laugh life, if you will, if it is such a thing. And it was good. So I'm excited today in our conversation and the week ahead. So my mood and spirit is good.
Awesome.
Love that, man. Hey, thanks for that reminder, Tobe. Laugh life. I mean, that might be a podcast on its own. Just that that reminder when things just seem so overwhelming, and just what a laugh will do for you. So thanks for that, man.
Something about it. Yeah. And he can get me going. And I had a good, again, not forgetting everything that's going on in life, but, you know, also just making it light where it needs to be. And there is something about a good old belly laugh, I'll tell you what. So
you agree more.
Kath and I are trying to focus on, doing that in our relationship and comedians and all that stuff. So we're just trying to tune into as much as we can, but also noticing the funny stuff that goes around being a parent and what our kids do and what we do. More importantly, like, I can laugh at myself quite often. So,
well, she laughs at you a lot, dude.
She does. You too, dude, as well. Yeah. No need to everybody come out of the woods here today on our call.
Let's make this about Toby this episode.
You got it.
You're part of our laugh life, and we want you to know that.
All right. Well, I'm glad. I'm the butt of all jokes. I think that's a great way to open. But today we're talking about, if I can, I'm going to lean into kind of the walk in today is around practical mindfulness. And there's the work that we're doing together, the tenets that we have, mindfulness and presence being connected. If anybody does any, looking up mindfulness or presence, there's a lot of overlap between the two. And, I thought today, that being such a big topic and frankly, it's a hard one for me. Even though as a coach, I try to help and encourage people to really practice a lot of mindfulness. I know with my mind and just, it's very difficult for me to slow down. And so I took a look and went a little old school, went to the old Webster's Dictionary today just to think about, or not think about, but to bring up the definition of mindfulness. And so I want to throw that out to you two here as we have this conversation and we discuss kind of mindfulness and presence. But mindfulness, the old Webster's Dictionary, the practice of maintaining a non-judgmental state of heightened or complete awareness of one's thoughts, emotions, or experiences on a moment-to-moment basis. And the word that got me is non-judgmental. So I would be curious on kind of what you guys think or hear about, or not hear, but what you think about mindfulness and then ultimately this non-judgmental state of it. So I think let's just start there. Like, Chris, what are your thoughts when you hear, I know you're really good at mindfulness or you've become really, really good at it. But I'm curious about how, it was for you to begin this work of mindfulness as well as, this non-judgmental state, how you work through it or on it.
Yeah, man. Thanks. Yeah. My journey in mindfulness and meditation and just surrendering to just slowing down has been, it's been a long journey. I think I got prescribed it to me by Dr. Les so many years ago because he said he couldn't give me any medicine, even though he would like to, because that was such a mess. But instead he literally wrote down a prescription. It was just a piece of paper. And, he couldn't give prescriptions, but he wrote me a prescription for mindfulness. And just the way he looked into my eyes, like I could tell, like I needed it. Like, he's like, you need to slow down, man. You are on this treadmill that is not sustainable. And you need to slow that motor down a little bit. And that had to be, 15 years ago. And it's nice of you to say I'm good at it. That monkey brain of mine, I mean, talk about judgmental. I mean, I was meditating this morning and thinking about all the stuff I have to do today. And then beating myself up for thinking about all the stuff I'm doing today and, coming back to my breath and being, giving myself a little bit of grace in kind of that monkey mind of mine. And it's just a never ending journey, man. I don't think you ever arrive, I don't think you ever, I don't know, maybe the shaman, the gurus do. I don't know. I don't think I'll ever be that. But what I have gotten to a place of is just acceptance that that's what it is for me. an acceptance that I'm gonna go off on a tangent and I'm gonna think about something else. And there's times where I get done I have a couple mindfulness apps, and Calm, and what's the other one called?
Breathe.
Waking Up. And Waking Up's a little bit more kind of into the nitty gritty of it, really understanding the brain and the psychology of it. So I kind of graduated to that a little bit, but there's still, 10 to 15 minute mindfulness, guided meditation and mindfulness practices every day. And it's just part of who I am now. But I'll tell you what, Toby, there's times that I get done it and I'm like, I don't even think I took a breath. Like, I don't even remember breathing, I was all over the place. I wasn't really present. I wasn't very mindful. And that's okay. Like, you're not gonna, and that's why they call it a practice, right? Yeah. 'Cause it's just practice. And there's some days you go to practice, you just don't feel good, or you just don't get the result you want out of it. And that's okay. That's why you show up tomorrow and you do it again. And I have been, since I've been doing it for so long, I think I'm able to jump into it within a moment. Like, if I'm feeling stressed or I'm feeling overwhelmed or I just had a negative interaction, although my wife will tell you that doesn't happen in the car, because once I get riled up, it's hard to get me unriled. But like, mostly in life, I can settle myself down and realize where I am and what I'm feeling and why I'm feeling that way and what the trigger was. And it's through those breathing exercises that I've always, that I've learned through mindfulness and meditation and things like that. So, the judgmental thing has never gone away for me. I think that's just a part of it in a way. I hope to someday, be floating in a cross-legged style and not be judgmental myself. Yeah, but I don't know if that's in the cards for me, but I enjoy it for what it is for me. It gives me, peace. It slows the world down for me. I put my, noise canceling earphones in and I get taken away for 10 minutes. And after that, I feel rejuvenated and in control, and excited to take on whatever's in front of me. So it's been an unbelievable practice. It's something that, people are always like, hey, what book would you read? Or what would you do this? What kind of self-development exercise? And every single time you got to create some sort of mindfulness or meditation type practice in your life. It'll help you tremendously. So that's my 2 cents on it.
That's great, man. Appreciate it. A couple things I took from that. The practice, I love that. The idea of that it's, there isn't a finish line and that you literally get into a practice of it all. And then the fact that the non-judgmental voice, that, inner critic that we've talked about before, doesn't go away. So that's in conflict to being present. That's in conflict to being mindful, so there's those headwinds that we all have to be mindful of, but the notion of that it would just disappear and it wouldn't be there. I think that's really such a real honest answer about what's true for you. Stu, how about you with regards to mindfulness? I know you on your own writer, on your own journey, and I'd love to hear more about just kind of that concept and the idea of being present.
Yeah, I appreciate the topic today. I think, to be fully transparent, mindfulness, I think, was a buzzword for me for a long time. It was what you proactively told people you did when you were in a high stress situation, right? People, well, how do you deal with stress? Well, I journal, I meditate. And it kind of became a bit of a force field to kind of keep people from digging too much into how I really was, right? And so when I played back mindfulness as I was growing up through my career, I don't think I took it nearly as serious as I do at this age. And a lot of it has to do with the words that you used in the definition, Toby, about really being present. And one of the things that has resonated with me over my life, and not just my personal life, but career, is really the name of the game. The competitive advantage, I think, in work and in life is the ability to be present. That has become the competitive advantage that I think most people undervalue, and the ability to know exactly where you are, exactly how you feel and what's going on in the environment around you. And so meditation and mindfulness became this break, this time for me to escape whatever the rat race was, whatever the stress of the moment was. It was permission to back away and kind of reset expectations and reset some boundaries. And so mindfulness to a large extent for me was this, this competitive edge that would give me the opportunity to reflect and to think deeply about where, who I am. And that started to go down a path of much more, you know, philosophical kind of intrigue and curiosity on why I am the way I am. So I bring this up in, you know, early in my life when I was in the military, when I was in the Navy, someone had given me a book on Buddhism. And I had struggled with faith for a long time. I'm not somebody that's, you know, really committed to organized faith, but I needed something to help me kind of, you know, control the mind, control the soul, and try to align some of those things. So I ran towards Buddhism probably about 15, 20 years ago and have been pretty committed to it over that period of time. And that, the part of Buddhism around the concept of push away nothing and accept everything, the fact that life happens and the people that are skilled to create space in that life are the ones that tend to capitalize on opportunities that are in front of them. And mostly they tend to be the people that are very, very real with themselves and very, very self-aware. And so, you know, the word that sticks to me in a lot of ways that stuck out, Toby, at the beginning was the concept of non-judgmental. And so if I can pivot just a little bit, I can create all the space and I can create, like Chris said, this opportunity in the moment when I am in mindfulness or I'm meditating, man, I have got a lot of structure in that moment to create this very positive impact. Where the judgment comes for me is not during meditation, not during mindfulness. It happens after that throughout the day. And as the day creates challenges, and what I've really struggled with doing and what I'm starting to get better at this age is realizing that if I meditate at 7 a.m., like Chris was sharing this morning, and waking up at 5 and getting the ball rolling. For me, it's like if I meditate at 7 a.m. and really get clear, I may run into collision, challenge, judgment throughout that day. And how do I bring mindfulness to not just be an event, but be something that I'm aware of as I pull that thread throughout that day, that week, that month, that year? And it's giving myself permission to understand that meditation can also be in the moment. It can be, mindfulness can happen in a split second. It can happen in a very present place. And that sometimes I built up all these thoughts that I need a brand new journal. I need a meditation room. I need to have complete silence around me. And the reality is it just has to be your commitment to creating space to think deeply about you. So I don't know if that resonates, but that I've had an interesting life with the word mindfulness. I've had an interesting kind of relationship with how to deeply connect with self and to create that noise, create that space from all the noise in life. But that's where I am today.
Love it. Thanks, Stu, for the personal touch on that. You know, that I didn't know that. So I'm learning a lot about you with regards to that practice of Buddhism 15 plus years ago, or as you said. And it's so interesting, isn't it? It's less about what you gain, but more about what you let go of. When you think about Buddhism and you think of the practice of mindfulness. So thanks, buddy. It's really good insight on kind of your own journey on that. The thing about this topic for me is that it's another one of these, you know, everybody knows that they probably should do this, or that, you know, people they admire do this. You know, when I was talking to you guys earlier about, you know, you think of all these world-class athletes that we get to watch on the TV screen or in person if you're at the game. And you sit and think, and watch how they take a moment to, you know, not that mindfulness and breathing, and that's all that it is, but it's part of mindfulness and the breathing exercises that people go through, the visual exercises that these world-class athletes go through. And you know, and then as you two referenced, you know, what you get out of it and what you gain from it, I think it keeps bringing me back to them. Why don't we do it?
Right.
You know, it's one of those things where everybody knows that it probably won't cost you a ton. Because you can breathe 10-second breathing, you know, do what mom always taught us, you know, count to 10. That's a mindfulness exercise right there. But yet people don't do it. Mm-hmm. They don't consistently do it is probably a better way of saying it. So there's to me, it's a lot about that kind of the way we can, you know, maybe connect some value to it. And it's another one of those things, unless you do it and do it consistently, Chris, to your point, to Stu, yours as well, you don't really realize the gain. And we have such a short-term fix on, you know, I've got to feel great. It's got to give me everything I need. I got to walk around feeling like I'm not judgmental of myself anymore. What's the value in doing nothing? What's the value in being present and not having a to-do list in front of me? I can't accomplish anything I want if all I'm going to accomplish is being present. It's an interesting statement. I've heard that a lot, you know, and over the years in coaching with people. And I'm like, was that really true? You didn't get anything done because you were present? You know, you can't give me the 10 things you accomplished over the weekend around the house, but you were present with your kids and rolling around on the grass and, you know, things like that. And again, I want to hold both places. I think getting a to-do list done, I'm trained like that from an upbringing of mine of like, you know, it wasn't a successful weekend unless you get a lot done. But even as I opened today, the thing I can remember about this weekend was laughing.
Yeah.
Now, one would say, boy, that's not really... But can I attach the value to it? Can I attach what I could get out of it? So I think just continuing this discussion around like what's really, you know, what took you guys to this place where you now would say, hey, we're going to walk in a topic around mindfulness and presence. Yes, we probably all know a thing or two about why it's important. But what did it take for you guys? What did it take for your own right to get you know, go down this road of like commitment to it? Because that's really the truth of it all. For me, it's about I had to attach a value to it. I had to make it as important as something else was. I know it can help with clarity. I know it can reduce stress. I know it can kind of help me with overall emotional balance, which we've talked about in other podcasts. I know these things are true, but to really consistently breathe, to really consistently be intentional about how I want to really be where my feet are, I got to attach a little some value to it. So, Stu, I'll go in reverse order there, but yeah. Love to get your take on speaking brutally honest truth to the audience and to each other today. We all know we should probably be more mindful and present, but we aren't because, or I am because. That's kind of the direction I'd love you guys to lean in on.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. My truth is, I didn't like being alone with that guy. You know, that silence and that inner dialogue, that wasn't necessarily a respite for me. That's where the war was happening, was inside, right? And so when asked or pushed to, you know, I can remember, you know, Dr. Currier telling me to journal, and I would get to the journal and start writing things down, and what I was writing down scared me, or I didn't like the person that was showing up internally. And so I started to lessen the amount of time because it created other emotions. And so when it became serious for me was actually probably not too long after I met YouTube, probably 4 or 5 years ago, when you started to push on that curiosity of self and that relationship I had with myself. And I think there's a lot of people, like there's somebody I'm coaching right now that's going through a major life change, major career change, and they have such martyrdom. They are, you know, a death by a thousand cuts on themselves. They are so negative about who they are and the decisions they've made. And so when I get them in that place of mindfulness and reflection, the work isn't about creating the space. I think you said that about just creating the time to kind of be mindful. There's some behavioral rules going into that on how to hear those voices and how to have that conversation with self, which you helped me with a ton, Toby. So I think sometimes what gets in the way is that relationship with yourself. And more importantly, the trust on being able to have that to create that non-judgmental framework for you to be able to enter into this space with peace. You know, a lot of times I would enter in this space with conflict and it would stay conflict. My journals were a fight. It was almost like two conversations of one person arguing with himself. And so that, you know, that's the work though. You know, we talk about this podcast like that to me was the beginning of the real deep work, not just the surface level stuff, the symptoms I was dealing with. Mindfulness once I was able to get that under that framework in a healthy place of my dialogue with self, then all of a sudden this wonderful excitement of all the benefits of mindfulness that we've talked about at the beginning of this, I started to see. But at the beginning, man, it was ugly. It was dark. It was not that the things I was journaling were not things that, I necessarily had the skill to deal with, you know, to how to handle me. And so I just pushed it away and kept putting my head in the sand until I realized it was the gate to the gate that would open up to the field I wanted to play in. It was the gate that once I pushed that in, I started to really realize what the work meant for me at this point in my life.
Brilliant. Love it. Chris, I'm up for
you. That's deep. Holy shit. That's deep, man. I'll just capture that quote. Yeah. Didn't like me. Holy cow. I mean, how many people, hey man, I probably am a little bit like that. I don't know if I ever captured it like that, which is really cool of you to do. I told a little bit of the story to why I got into it is just the prescription from Dr. Joe, right? Like, and he was being nice, or from Dr. Les, like he was being nice about it, but I could see in
he was that serious. Little
Hungarian man's eyes, man, like he was worried for me. And again, I talked a little bit about just my identity and my imposter with, you know, who I was and moving up the corporate ladder, a ladder, by the way, that I never thought I'd even start climbing, like, and I just kind of got thrust into it. And it was because of the relationships and the people that I got to work with that I just loved what I loved that part of what I did, but I didn't like the whole, you know, who I had to become and sell my soul a little bit. So I was struggling big time just as a human, you know, and then insert kids, insert travel, insert, you know, performance metrics that you have to constantly hit, all along the while being a complete imposter with who you really want to be in life. And that is a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. And I needed something to kind of slow down that judgment, that internal judgment, that disapproval for myself and who I had become and the path that I took, the disapproval in that, and being able to be more mindful and to put things in their place. Right. To really be able to categorize, all right, work and my job and my career and my title there. What does that really mean versus home and health and relationships with my wife and kids? And what does that really mean to me? Mindfulness was able to putting myself in that space of self and silence and reflection and just breath allowed me to reprioritize what was really important in my life. I'm still not perfect at it, right? Like there's times that I'm a dope and ask Joy, maybe we'll have our wives on here one time. They can ask her how many dopey moments I have, because she'll tell you, but I'm trying, man. You know, I'm human and I'm trying, and, I feel like I'm doing a lot better job now that I've found my path, and that I'm excited about it and that I'm not in conflict with it. Right. I really enjoy it. So now it's just being amplified. I'm getting the more out of it than I ever have, which is just really empowering and really exciting. I think to answer your question, why people don't do it, I think there's a hokiness to it. I think there's just to Stu's point, I think they just don't, there's an expectation that people attach to it. You know, they look at these books or they see these people and they're, you know, and they're this. And it's like, and it's not that. It's to Stu's point. It's that thread that you pull through your day, your month, your year. And it's being able to be in the moment, right? Like I'm already trying to become mindful for this weekend. Like I have an awesome opportunity to go down to Virginia Tech and tailgate with my oldest son, and I'm bringing Parker and Tanner too. And I'm so excited to see Aiden. I mean, it's only been a month, but I missed the heck out of him. And I'm already like getting prepared Friday morning to just be so mindful for the ride down, for the time I'm with him, to the people I get to hang out with, like his friends and his friends' parents and all that other stuff. So it's not just an in the moment thing. I think there's an intentionality and an awareness around where you're going and how you're entering and how you want to be, that mindfulness is a big part of that too. But yeah, man, I think there's just people just are moving so damn fast. Like they don't even know. they don't, they're not taking the time to just really be intentional about who they want to be through and utilizing mindfulness in that space. So, anyway, I don't know. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, like that does. Absolutely does.
What about you, Tom?
Journaling has been really helpful for me, and it was a practice that you guys both know. I mean, I think I've been a pusher of that for you two over the years. Sorry about that, by the way, but all kidding aside though, it was, my love, Kath, I mean, she journals. I mean, just yesterday I was like, my goodness, what are you in, you know, pages of just real reflection. And it's, she's been such a good motivator for me to get on my own path of that. How we get there, it doesn't matter how you get there, just as long as you do. And watching her do that and how much she spends so much time, not only really reflective, but also really kind of in this today, in this moment of being present. She's so brilliant on both those fronts. And she's been doing a lot of that for a long, long, long time. She's been way ahead of this, in my opinion. She's been ahead of this much further than anybody I've ever met in my life. And so for me, it's been good to kind of like take that from her and then go in my office and sit down and think, okay. And I find that I always have to fight this to-do list versus this kind of real getting grounded in where this moment is. And, so I opened with it, and it's certainly something that I had, you know, those are my headwinds, I find a lot of value in a to-do list. And I struggle with finding a value in mindfulness as much as I'm a big believer of it. And when I do slow down and when I do that, I get a lot from it. So that's the reason why I asked that question of you two, because I'm still working on seeing the great value, not working on seeing the great value, because I do recognize that. Being consistent with it enough, and I don't know what consistent really is. Is that every day? Kath does it every day.
Are those expectations, Tobe?
Yeah,
that's exactly right. That we put on ourselves. Now it's like, all right, well, I didn't do it yesterday or today, or I haven't done it in a week. So yeah, I'm not doing it anymore. And it's like, well, is that mindfulness? Is that, I don't know. Like, does it have to be every day? Does it have to be 20 minutes? It's expectations that we put on it that are unrealistic.
Totally agree.
For me, it shows up in, you know, that 7 a.m. intentional moment is always there. But I got to tell you, be straight honest with you, I'm probably 2 out of 7. You know, there's 2 mornings out of 7 that I'm intentional about mindfulness in that morning, right? But what I will tell you is that throughout, there's not a day I miss around being present or doing some version of that work. And where it shows up is on my walk. You know, I'm a big walker. You'll hear me talk about that. And that a walking meditation to me is probably one of the most powerful things that I've ever done. And I didn't even know it was a real thing until I went out and got exposed to it at a retreat in Arizona. And that to me is the best way for me to work through me, is put my feet on the ground, give me a little something I got to focus on, like a path. And more importantly, just give me silence and let me filter through what's going on with me. And literally it starts with almost that temperature gauge of thermometer starting from the top of my head all the way down to my feet. Where am I? How am I feeling? Where is the tension in this body right now? Where is this tension in the brain? And that process of being able to kind of, you know, filter it down to the most minute point gives me then something to journal on the next day. And so that behavior of realizing that sitting, you know, what do they call it? Crisscross applesauce now instead of Indian style, whatever. I don't want to offend anybody, but crisscross sitting on the floor, to Chris's point, going om every 5 minutes. That is a version of it. But then there's the version of walking into Home Depot and feeling a certain way and telling my wife, I'm going to go walk down this aisle for a minute with the intention of just checking in with myself of what's going on. Why am I a little edgy? Why am I trying to get us out of here in record time? Where's the fire? You know, in that mindfulness of just breathing, thinking, and doing that check is always worked for me. But I go back to this conversation of that walk for me is I'm completely cut off from the world. And it's a question I want to ask you guys, because I've, now that I'm home a little bit more with Shelly, what I find is my version of mindfulness is a very internal thing. And so what ends up happening is I close out a lot of the outside world. And so whether it's on a walk or whether I'm, you know, riding in a car and I find myself in that mindful place, what's the best way? You were talking about Kath and her journal, like, to someone that doesn't, you know, my wife's not necessarily committed to a whole mindfulness practice per se. She understands it. How's the best to get your partner and the people in your life to support that, this journey on mindfulness? Any takes, anything you guys have done that have really brought people on this journey with you?
Chris, you look like you got one.
I'm like, I smirk because I think it's just me being a huge pain in the ass. Finally got Joy to do it. And now, you know, we have a Calm app. That's one of the apps that we use, and she shares it. And every morning I get a hey, congratulations on your Calm. And she has a routine now. We got a infrared sauna, and we're dealing with some health things that we're trying to figure out. And I said, hey, you know, meditation and just mindfulness and breathing when you're in there by yourself, other than just reading a book, that, I don't know, it could help just create some value. And my wife's awesome. Like, once she gets onto something, Toby, it's not like once every 3 days. It's like every day. So I get a Calm thing every day that she just got done her mindfulness thing. And it's like, it just makes me smile because I know, like, she's kind of a different person too. You know, I talked about that gap between stimulus and response, right? And I really believe that, for me at least, and even for her, like, our relationships change just because we have, and I'm home a lot more too, Stu. So like, we have a lot of opportunities, especially me. Living with me is not easy. Let's be honest. Sure. Right. So like, but we're not triggered with each other. We just kind of let things roll off. We just have so much of that space in between that stimulus and response. And most of the times the response that we do give is fun. It's, sometimes, you know, we poke each other and stuff like that, but like, it's not aggressive anymore. It's not passive aggressive anymore. Yeah. And that was our first response early on in our marriage. Cause it's just, life was moving so damn fast. We didn't even have time to be like mad at it. It was just passive aggressive. And then you move on. And when you start, you talk about those thousand, you know, knife cuts, that starts to, you know, disturb the marriage and the relationship and so on and so forth. And just to be where we are now and to see her meditate every day, it is, I mean, she probably does it more than I do now. And I have a pretty good practice. And it's just awesome to see her not only getting healthy, but concentrating on her health, you know, from all aspects, from nutrition, from mindfulness and training, the infrared sauna to exercise. I think all of it's a component of mindfulness, right? And presence and being present enough to realize, like, I got to take care of me. Like, I gotta take care of me. And this is one component of it, but you brought up walking. Yeah. I mean, buddy, like that's why, like, my identity is so attached to running because of how I feel after I'm done physically, but also mentally. And what I go through and how I can figure out life when I'm on a long run and I come back and I'm just a different person. Like that is, I absolutely attribute that to mindfulness, a component of mindfulness. So, how do you get people to do it? You be a pain in the ass and keep on them and keep on. Finally break, I guess is my one. But I think a better answer is like you do you. And you show up differently and better. And I think that's I think that's the most contagious thing you can have.
That's well it, said. Buddy. That's leadership. That's just doing it for you. And then if others, you know, certainly the ones we love, we want to, you know, have them experience what we do. And a lot in life happens that way. Hey, I want you to do this because this really did this for me. But it's not talking anybody into anything. I think it's being that, Chris. It's such a great answer. You know, you getting really grounded in that and really great at that, it brings a level of curiosity from other people around you of like, hey, what I'm noticing a change, or I'm seeing a calmness, or I'm this. And then all of a sudden you got them because they're halfway home. They're halfway there with their level of curiosity. And it's about creating curiosity. But you know, not always just, you know, telling them what to do, but showing them that this is what it could end up being. And I think it speaks to also that we know this around habits. If someone's going to take on mindfulness and be much more conscientious about being present, the habits, you know, one of the great ingredients of a successful habit is creating conditions, right? Creating conditions that make that habit work. And part of, Stu, yeah, great question you asked about how do you get those around you to support you in these endeavors is also telling them how they support you. You know, like it's some of those, like just really getting out there and saying, I'm going to walk this particular path of mindfulness. And you may have to deal with the, what are you doing and what's going on? And this is how support would look. This is what it would look like to support me on this. It might be stop making fun of it. It might be checking in with me after that. It might be, hey, and over the next 30 days, do you see anything from me? That's one of those wonderful conditions we set. And then also the condition internally, right? Like, how do we get value attached to it? So what is the condition I need on that? What's the cost? What's the gain? How will I measure my own journey in this space or path on this space? What will I get from it or what will I give up from it? So those are some of the things that we all, I think, know, but is a good reminder of if you've attached enough value to try it and practice it, to Chris's point, set some conditions up for yourself and for that very, very important community around you, especially if you're doing something a little out of character. We've hit on some of the things, and I want to go back to you guys on some, you know, what are some mindfulness practices, or what are those being present practices? I find the two a little different. I think you guys do too. There's an overlap. Mindful, I think, yep. Chris, you said it, or Stu, you might have said it. It really, to me, is about slowing us down.
Yep.
It's really the slowing down the engine. And then the present part is a little more about that external world for me. You guys might see it differently, but the external, like making sure that I'm really where my feet are and paying attention to all of the senses around me and the people around me and the event I'm in, or the, if I'm not really doing much other than I'm just in this space, just paying attention to the space that I'm in. So for me, we've hit on a lot of them. I'll add a few of them, and I'd love to hear from you two about, you know, mindfulness and being present, because I find them a little bit different. We've hit on breathing when it comes to mindfulness. Stu, walking was going to be one for sure. I brought up that five senses exercise that you and I have talked about in other podcasts, along with Chris. You know, I think journaling we've hit on. This one's might be a bit of a curveball, but mindful eating was something that was interesting for me recently. I grew up in a family that literally, if you didn't grab the corn, it was gone. If you didn't get corn, it's probably the wrong one I should have started with. If you didn't grab the mashed potatoes, I mean, my dad was taking that entire bowl down without even thinking twice. Well, you didn't grab it. And I remember growing up thinking this was once you sat down, there wasn't much talking, and then you had to eat and eat quickly or you weren't going to get anything. What I've noticed, and Kath referenced this when we were early on dating, she's like, my goodness, are you in a race? And I never really slowed down to really like enjoy the meal. I never really slowed down to taste the food. I've just been working on that over the last several years, and not indicative of any weight loss. So just bear with me, but the mindfulness of like really just paying attention to the moment. And then it's not just the food. It's the company. It's the conversation. It's the being right there. And it's another example of I had a beginning and an end when it came to eating. And now I have a beginning and being a present and it'll end when it ends, but much more of an enriching experience. And then another one, if I can add to that, is the listening part, you know, as a coach and learning how to be a coach. And I know you two guys are going through that as well. It's a whole different ballgame to be a great listener.
Yeah.
And to be a mindful listener and not, you know, most humans listen to respond. And as a coach, you're taught not to do that. Like you literally, your agenda, your thought process, your mentorship, your great advice you can't wait to give is inconsequential. It's about, am I really listening to the person on the other side of the table or in the call or whatever else? So those are a couple of the two that I just would walk in as additional things. And then presence. I'm going to pitch it to you guys in a second. But the presence part, most people, when I work with them and we do 360 evals or there's some psychological testing I've done in years past, most people answer this question always the same way. Creativity. I'm not creative. Most people opt out that they are at all creative. I think there's an opportunity to really practice presence with creativity. If you think about it, think about how present you have to be when you're learning something new. And creativity can stretch you towards places you've never considered or maybe you dreamt about, learning how to draw or taking on some painting lessons or pottery lessons or things like that, because there's a lot of that that's out there. Thinking about cooking. I love the idea of cooking, but I'm not great at it. But once I get in there and start to try, wow, I'm so present because I'm not thinking about anything other than this. Could this work with this and that? And I even get excited even talking about the creativity side. As much as I say I'm not creative, I think we need to urge ourselves to push that a little bit. I think not only will you might find a creative person on the other side of it, but you might find an opportunity to be very present. So those are a few things on the mindful and the present part as walking in this subject I wanted to throw out there as opportunities for people. But you know, when you're learning something new, you can't help but being present. How often are you pushing yourself to learn? And to me, that's a wonderful step to take in that direction. So, Chris, love to pivot to you and then go to Stu right thereafter. But mindfulness and presence and just any thoughts that we maybe haven't hit on or some ideas and suggestions in that in those two spaces.
I just think presence with grace, right? Mm. Like giving yourself grace. Like use your example that you use for cooking. Like there's a lot of time. Like I love cooking. So we redesigned our kitchen. I got a huge, you know, counter butcher block thing because I'm cutting nonstop. And that's what happens when you cut vegetables all the time. You just, you know, you're nonstop cutting. But I love cooking. But there's times that I'm just like, I'm frustrated or I'm rushing or I'm making something that doesn't come out the way I wanted to. Or my kids say, oh, Dad, this is awful. What are you making? Or whatever. And I find myself like, am I being present in the moment and allowing, like giving myself grace for the outcome? You know, or the process of when you learn something new. I mean, heck, everything we're doing with this organization, we're building everything, right? And it's stressful. And I have to concentrate on my mindfulness and building a new document or sending an invoice or working on this program that we're building. Like I have to be mindful all the time that it's like, hey, this is what I get to do. Cause if not, I get really hard on myself. And it's like, why does this take me to do so long to do? And why did, you know, this dumb template in Microsoft Word, like, and I feel my, and I, like my breath gets taken away, right? And I could feel the stress, literally physically feel the stress come on me. And I have to constantly remind myself to give myself grace. Like I don't know how to do this Word stuff. Like we used to have people that would do that for us and they were really good at it. And I wish I had them back in my life, but like now it's us, but we get to do this. And I have to constantly remind myself that we get to do this. And when I'm doing it, try to give myself grace so I can actually, I can feel all the feels. I think mindfulness is feeling all the feels, right? The frustration. And when that sets in, and can you look at it for what it is? And maybe the anger for being in this position or being not smart enough to figure out a template in Word or whatever shows up. Being mindful and doing the work, which we talk about, is seeing those come in and enter the equation and enter the moment and being able to meet them for what they are and to move through them. Like, I think that's ultimately what I'm striving to do because that doesn't go away. That stuff doesn't ever go away. It's how I respond to them is what creates the life that I want to live. So I just think it's everything you just said, Toby. And there's just one thing I wanted to add that I don't know if we've talked enough about. It's just intentionality. Like my journal prompts, there's three journal prompts. One, gratitude. Two, intentionality. Who do I want to be today? How do I want to show up today? Right. And literally writing that down from eating Tobe. I'm trying not to, my wife buys these dumb Trader Joe potato chips and they're so damn good. And Tanner scanned them one time and somehow they came across like they were healthy. I don't know what app says potato chips are healthy, but this thing got a 70 out of 100. Yeah. It's the trick. Yeah. That's probably right. If I look back, Trader Joe's probably created the fucking app. So I take handfuls of this dumb bags of chip. So I have to be mindful to like, hey, don't go to the chip drawer. Just because the kids can do it doesn't mean you can. So like mindful eating is a huge one. I was a little bit different though. But, like, I couldn't leave the table until I finished everything on my plate. Everything. So it's this now that, and I don't do that with my kid. When they're done eating, like, leave. I don't give a shit. Like, if you don't like it, go. Like, I don't want to teach, because dude, now I finish. There isn't a meal I haven't finished, and I probably should have for a lot earlier that I finished it. And it's just these things that you have to be mindful. So when I sit down and I create this journal prompt of being intentional, like, I think about stuff like that. Like, I want to be healthy today. Like, I want to eat well today. I don't want to forget to breathe today. I want to respond to things with a smile today. Like, when you write those prompts down and you actually record that, it brings things to life, and it reminds you when the moment arises, it brings you back to that moment and gives you just a little bit more of intentionality to attack that moment for what it's worth. So that's all I would say. Intentionality is a huge one. The third prompt, by the way, is for my journal, is just surrender. What am I going to surrender to today? And those three prompts just get me really going on the right page. And again, Stu, I'm probably a 3 out of 7, 4 out of 7, maybe, if it's a good week. But yeah, but it's a practice, and that's, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm doing it. I'm trying hard. And when I do it, I realize it makes me more mindful, and I'll take it. I'll give myself grace and take it for what it is. So what about you, buddy?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any, you know, profound process or, you know, anything that I'm doing that's any more unique than what's out there in the world around being, back to Chris's point, intentional about being mindful. I think, you know, for me, it's as simple as I don't have a notebook. I don't have a formal journal. I have a phone with a notes section that is riddled with pages and pages and pages of unfiltered emotion and thoughts. And, you know, for me, it's a dumping to a large extent of what I'm wrestling with internally. Now, the power for me is I go back and read them. You know, I go back about every 30 days and I just find themes. You know, what are the themes of what are the consistent things that I am finding heavy in my life, things that are creating complexity in my life? And I can't see them in the moment when I'm dumping whatever I'm feeling in that moment in that journal. But what I can see is 30 days out. Oh shit. Like, I'll give you an example. I went back a couple of weeks ago and looked over some journal entries that I wrote right about the time that I was deciding to retire. And there was one theme that was so apparent, and Chris and Toby will probably laugh, was this insecurity around acceptance. Like, I had felt very shunned, and that had moved from a place of just being angry at individuals. When I read, you know, my journal, I was very mad at people, very mad at situations. But when I really started to back away from it 30 days out and look at the theme, it came down to, and I brought it up on other podcasts, this hurt little 8-year-old boy that's in me that felt like he didn't get picked on the playground and didn't get to play. And so having to see that theme, I wouldn't have pulled it out if I just looked at 1 day, 2 days. But the way that played out, it just gave me perspective to then build on and not react. You know, a lot of times, going back to Chris's point, that stimulus and that reaction, sometimes that month of awareness of themes and just raw emotion was able to give me the space to kind of back away. And I want to talk about just a little bit around really being, having that deeper understanding of who you are. And that when I looked at that 30 days, I started to understand that there was a damaged soul that was speaking, and I didn't know where that damaged voice was coming from. So I got super curious about that. But again, you know, I hear a lot of people say, well, I don't have a journal, and and it's all excuses. It's really about the intentionality of being documenting where you are and what thoughts are coming in and out of your mind. And what are the trends around those? And how can you get really curious about the root cause of those trends? So again, for me, it's like this really powerful moment of reflection over a prolonged period of time. And eliminating a lot of the excuses that are out there on why someone doesn't start. And it doesn't need to be these fancy, you know, sometimes you'll see journal examples online and these deep thoughts and poetically written and beautiful. And it's like, yeah, I'm about one for 10,000. Okay. So I've journaled 10,000 times. I've one that I've ever shared with anybody. The reality is it's the most vulnerable space where I can be me and I can understand me in that reflection. And that's, there's a mirror in that process and it's really powerful. The last thing I would say is, This is when I asked the question about somebody in your life that may not embrace mindfulness or understand it. I also, you know, not just because of my own situation, and to be quite honest with you, Shelley's very focused on mindfulness, just a different process. When it comes down to leadership and it comes down to understanding your people and trying to help your people be the best version of themselves, I hear a lot of leaders suggest journaling or suggest meditation. And I just go back to what you said, Toby, when you live it and when you, the benefits of it start to permeate, your people are not going to not do it. Okay. It's when you suggest it and your shit's not tight and your shit's a little wonky where that suggestion lands on deaf ears. So I just want to encourage everybody. The best place to start is always with you. The best place to start is always simple and just start a conversation with yourself in a quiet place and see where it takes you. It's magical where that conversation will go. If you conduct it honestly, what's the word you use? Gracefully. And more importantly, just understand that there is no perfect solution to mindfulness other than committing to it as being part of your life and working it in as it's appropriate.
Love it. Wow. Well done. Both of you. Stu, thanks for that. Last thing I'll say, and I'll kick it over to you, Chris, but, you know, I doubt that through this conversation, there's probably been a ton of, I didn't know this, to the audience. And maybe there has been, and I'm great with that. If there's been a couple suggestions that maybe you didn't think would fall into the mindfulness or the presence, or even from a leadership recommendation, Stu, as you gave, the modeling power of it all. But I think, you know, the healthy tension I think I want to create with everybody on this particular topic is just the cost to you of starting a mindfulness practice, the cost of you really being intentional to Chris, as you said, of being more present in your life. And then what's the gain? What's the gain of mindfulness practice and what's the gain of being present? I just want you to play fairly on both sides of the ledger and do your own math. Figure out what you want to do about it. And if the one side is a lot more, powerful, or there's more entries than the other side, then you have your answer. And I think we've given you some suggestions and some ideas and some recommendations, but this is a path of self. And whether you want to lean into these particular areas, there's a cost in doing things and there's a cost in not. And let's just keep being truthful about that. So I just appreciate this conversation for my two partners here. I know you guys are on the same journey as me, and we're all trying to figure it out and to be better in this area, because there is such a good gain that we all know collectively. We've done our math. We've figured out what side of the ledger we want to lean into. And so we're practicing without perfection, which is great. So Chris, I'll shoot it back over to you, but thanks, guys.
Love it, man. Perfectly imperfect, brother. And hey, for those of you Gen Xers, there's a great, as I was ripping reels on Instagram, I found this comedian, to your laugh, belly laugh. I'll bring it full circle, Tobe. This guy talks about mindfulness and it is the funniest thing. And he's a little bit, there's a little bit of profanity in there, but he's like, mindfulness? I didn't hear about mindfulness till like 5 years ago, because you know why? Because my whole life was mindfulness. I didn't have a computer in my pocket. And he's like, when I was on the bus, I was mindful. You know why? Because I just had to sit there looking out the window, looking into nothing. He's like, goes on and on. And when you think about it, it's like, it is a newer thing, because we're so distracted and we're so stimulated, right? We have so much stuff coming at us, and it's a really good, maybe we'll put it in the, I'll look it up, Stu. We'll put it in the show notes, because it's worth it'll give you a belly laugh, Tobe, to come for a circle, full circle with you. So, yeah. Well, hey, Thank you for joining us on the path. Remember, every journey is unique and every step you take shapes that journey. Keep exploring, stay curious, and give yourself grace as you forge your path. Until next time, stay true to yourself and keep walking the path. Have a great day.